James goes to Green. Layup is good. Irving on a beautiful feed from James.
Great vision from LeBron. Big finish by Kyrie.
Curry turns it over. J.R. Smith fakes. Throws it back to Jefferson. Into James. James to the basket. Left hand and lays it in. Irving backs it with the left hand. Kyrie Irving for three. Pumps it in. Irving fires. Bang! Bogut alternates, but the follow there from Thompson. Tristan Thompson with the offensive rebound and putback. James fires away and hits a three. Largest lead of the night.
And you know it's trouble when LeBron James begins to get that jumper to go down.
J.R. Smith twisting and turning, and it falls. J.R. Smith nails a three-pointer. Curry, triple team, pops it up. Iguodala tries to get it back. James picks it up, throws it ahead. Smith corner three. That's good. J.R. Smith fakes, sets, fires, connects. Turns it over. James keeps his dribble somehow. Irving back to James. Oh, he throws it down.
We did a great job, and I get a game ball to RJ, getting a starting nod, Kevin being out, and he just came in with so much. You know, we just want to try to just play our game. We finally got back to our game tonight, and it started with the floor general to my left. You know, the sharpshooter to my right got it going. You know, it was just good basketball. It was a good flow. Everyone felt like they was a part of tonight's win. So it was just a collective team. It wasn't about us versus their starting five. It was just about how everyone can get the job done.
I just think it's two words, physicality and aggressiveness. I thought we were really, really physical defensively. I thought we were aggressive offensively, attacking the basket, getting out in transition, running the floor. And we talked about it before. That opens up shots for J.R. Smith and those guys in transition. That's how we have to play.
It was two games going from game one of playing a little bit too much ISO, and then game two, not being in my rhythm. And coming in game three, it was, I don't want to say a completely different player, but, you know, it's just back to just not really thinking about anything except for being aggressive for my teammate.
Great opportunity on Friday to keep control of the series. It's going to be a challenge for us. I'm disappointed that I didn't do anything to help my team win tonight. It's not about living up to a certain expectation other than one that I have for myself, and didn't, or I didn't do that tonight, and I gotta be better.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed, it is the extravaganza right here at ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, and what a difference a day makes. Literally 24 hours ago, we, and when I say we, I mean all of us, you, me, Cushlin, Rick Nolan, we're all just talking about Game 3 and kind of how bad this is and getting it over with. The rout is on. Maybe the sweep is on. Maybe the Cavaliers eke one out in Game 3 like last night and then maybe lose in 5. But when you see what you saw last night, 33 points down to 30 points up, that's a 63-point swing from Game 2 to Game 3. And suddenly the NBA Finals mean something very, very different than what they did 24 hours ago.
Can you dig it?
Unbelievable. Feeling so differently now about the Finals. And I know it's only one game. And I know it's only one night, and I know it's still a 2-1 deficit, and I know this team has now beaten the Cavaliers in 7 out of their last 8 meetings. I get all of that, but when you take apart the defending champions, the way the Cavaliers took them apart from the start last night, then guess what? It is a game changer. It is a series changer. It is a momentum shifter. It is all of the above. It's not just one win out of the 4 needed in a 7-game series. It's not just closing a 2-0 deficit to a 2-1 deficit. It is much, much more important than that. It was a statement game, and the statement was that the Cavaliers are through playing soft, they're through playing scared, they're through playing as if they don't belong on the same court as these other guys, including J.R. Smith, whom we will talk about in a bit. It means so much more than that. The win yesterday by the Cavaliers, not because it was a win, but because of how it was a win, has completely changed this series. Now, what does that actually mean going forward? What does that mean looking forward to game number 4? Does it mean they're going to win game 4 and then go back to Golden State and win game 5? I'm not saying they're going to win three in a row. I'm not even saying that the Cavaliers are going to win this series at all. I am saying now, however, because it wasn't an eked out victory at home, thanks to the vociferous home crowd, it was a 30-point blowout win that could have been worse had the starters stayed on longer. I'm saying that we now have a series. That's all I'm saying. We now have a series, and it's a series that is not decided. It's not one where it's okay, it's a series, but still Golden State's going to win in six. Or even Golden State is going to win in seven. I'm tired of the prediction thing. I'm just going to enjoy this for what it is, because now, as LeBron James said yesterday, they finally got things kind of going at their pace. They played the game at the pace they like, not the way the Golden State Warriors set that pace. And that is a huge, huge issue. In games one and two, the Warriors set the tone. In games one and two, they decided when it was going to be up-tempo and when it was going to be slowed down. They decided when they were going to be going inside, when they were going to be going outside. And this time, the Cavaliers dictated virtually everything from the opening tip through the final horn. And I'm not saying it's easy, and I'm not saying it's going to be easy to replicate, but I am saying that for one night, we now have ourselves a series.
LeBron, how does your team absorb the beating you did in game two and then deliver your own here?
Coach staff gave us a great plan, great game plan, and we executed it for 48 minutes.
What about what Kyrie Irving did tonight has to be sustained for your group to have a chance?
He's a special kid, and we need him to be special throughout this series. You know, Kyrie was Kyrie tonight. You know, he kept us afloat, got us a lead, and kept us going in the second half.
Through the first two games, you were shooting 42%, somewhat out of the ordinary for you. What was different tonight?
I got going early and then got out of rhythm a little bit, missed a couple shots, but I was at the rim, you know, so I never got deterred about that, never stopped going, and also got my jumper working in the second half. But my teammates did a great job of finding me. You know, I can't do anything without those guys, and that's where it all comes from.
I'm going to interrupt him there, and I want to say this about LeBron James. I wanted his to be the first voice that you heard as far as our coverage. You're going to hear from Steph Curry, by the way, coming too. I wanted you to hear from him first because of two things. One of the things he said just now in that post-game interview was very important, that he got his jumper going a little bit in the second half. We spent a great deal of time yesterday talking about just that, that if LeBron James, who does not have a good jumper, has not had a good jumper all season long, if he does not try to continue to take that shot, not threes necessarily, but outside shots, and make them even on a moderately consistent basis, he will be ineffective in trying to turn this thing around for his team. He will not be effective just solely scoring from inside of 5 feet. We talked about why. The Warriors are laying back and saying, come on in. We got two or three guys waiting for you. That's four or six hands to swipe at the ball, at you, and anything else we can do to make it uncomfortable for you here to try to get layups. And it was extraordinarily important that he did indeed start to hit some jump shots. Because if you saw, he made his first four shots in the game, set the tone early, then missed seven straight, most of which were also at the rim because he was being pressured and contested so heavily and so heartily by so many different Warriors in the paint. He was calling for fouls. He went up and missed a dunk. Maybe should have gotten a foul call on that, but everything he was doing to try to go at the basket wasn't working. Seven straight misses. So finally, he steps back, settles, gets his feet under him, rises up, and starts shooting jump shots the way an NBA player has to shoot jump shots. Starts making some jump shots. Starts making defenders come out a little bit, which enabled him, of course, then to do that little hesitation and then cut to take a pass or to beat somebody off the dribble going back to the basket. I want to say this about LeBron James. LeBron James yesterday played one of his best games maybe of his career. And if you look at the stats and you look at the numbers, I'm not saying it was one of the best statistical games of his career. It was a solid one, no question about that. Don't get me wrong. But, I mean, it doesn't pale. It pales in comparison to the likes of, you know, Game 5 against the Pistons at the Palace that we always refer back to from 2006. We're talking about a great game because of what it meant to A, his team, and B, to his legacy. Now, please understand what I'm saying about that. Yesterday, after games 1 and 2 being the embarrassing displays that they were between the Cavaliers and the Warriors, they were embarrassing. Games 1 and 2, a loss by 15 and then a loss by 33. There's no excuse making. There's nothing you can say about this, that, or the other thing being in the way. It's not an injury situation. It's just you're playing horribly, and the leader of the team was playing horribly. Quite frankly, LeBron James played very, very below his standards and most standards in those two games. So last night, going into it, what did so many people around the country say? What did they say on national sports telecasts? What did they say on national sports radio? What are they saying in Cleveland sports radio? What are they saying out in San Francisco sports radio? And yes, right here in Toledo sports radio, because I've been saying it, as well as experts all across the internet. And when I say experts, that's a loose term, obviously, but there are some internet publications that are indeed publications that are reputable. Let's put it that way. Almost everybody said to a man that LeBron James' own legacy was on the line in this game, that game last night. His legacy. We know about 2 and 4 in the finals. We know that if he didn't step up and lead and play the way that Phil Jackson, among others, challenged him to play, and they went down in a heap last night to fall down 3-0 to the Warriors and on the verge of being swept, potentially, that 2 and 5 would indeed start to define who LeBron James is and was in his long NBA career. Not the 2 titles, not the 4 MVPs, the 2 and 5 in final series, especially the no-shows like this one could have and would have been. That was what LeBron James faced yesterday going in. The way LeBron James answered the bell, the way he answered the call, all of those challenges. He told the media yesterday, or actually on Tuesday, he told the media, you know, I'm not Michael. I'm not Muhammad Ali either. I'm just me. I'm going to do things my way. I appreciate Phil. He's a great coach. Mike's a great player, but I'm not that guy. And then he went out there last night and did indeed channel, to some extent, Michael Jordan. When his team needed him to put on the cape, as Phil Jackson said, he put it on last night to the tune of 32 points on 14 of 26, along with the 11 boards and the 6 assists. Yeah, he had some turnover problems at times. It's just he's not a great ball handler, and a lot of times when he tries to go in with all those hands swiping, he does. He'll get himself caught up. He'll throw the ball away, trying to look for a bailout pass, or he'll dribble it off of somebody, or he'll just fumble it. He's not a great ball handler. You know, he's 6'9", 250, or 6'8", 250, or whatever it is. He shouldn't have to be a great ball handler. But so he did have the 5 turnovers. But what he did, especially making his first 4 shots, established the tone for that game. Unbelievable leadership. And I am a guy who has called LeBron James out on numerous occasions for just that, the lack, the opposite of that, the lack of leadership in various situations in which he was needed. And as the equal opportunity destroyer that I am, I will destroy, and no matter who it is on my team or somebody else's team, when it is necessary, and I will praise when it is necessary. And I'm telling you right now that I'm praising LeBron James for the leadership he showed and the way he took seriously that challenge to his legacy. He was tremendous at the very start. He struggled somewhat then after that, but then, of course, was tremendous again in the second half. It's during that struggle period when he missed 7 straight shots that I'd like to focus on, though. As we move to, what did LeBron call him in that clip we just had? The floor general or something like that over here. Let me hear that again real quick.
I did a great job, and I get a game ball to RJ, getting a start nod, Kevin being out, and he just came in with so much. You know, we just want to try to just play our game. We finally got back to our game tonight, and it started with the floor general to my left.
There he is.
The sharpshooter to my right got it going.
The floor general being Kyrie Irving, who was, quite simply, especially with 16 in the first, spectacular. Kyrie Irving was right. He told the media, I'm not much good if I'm not being aggressive, if I'm asked to be passive and laid back, I am not much good. He was right. And what he did last night in showing that aggression, playing with that aggressive attitude that he said he needs to be his best, what he did was answer the challenge of Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. Answered the challenge of the best backcourt and perimeter players in the league. And he has faced a few of them. What he did last night was to say to everybody, yeah, I know I played below my standards in Oakland. I had a moderate game in game one. I had a terrible game in game two. But it is not because I'm up against Steph Curry or Klay Thompson. I have respect for those guys. But watch this. And then he went out there and he crossed over one. And then he crossed over the other. And then he stepped back here. And then he attacked there. And then he drove right. Then he switched to his left. And he did everything that a wizard with the basketball in his hands, where it looks like it's truly on a string to him, he can pull it back whenever he wants to. He did everything that a wizard does. 12 of 25, 3 of 7 from distance, 3 of 3 at the line. 30 points overall and 8 dimes, so it wasn't just ball domination. 8 dimes to lead the team, to lead everybody, and 4 rebounds along with a steal as well. Kyrie Irving took that challenge personally last night, the challenge of Steph Curry, the challenge of the Golden State Splash Brothers, and he splashed it right in their eye is what he did. And that is precisely what LeBron James needed to watch happen. While he said, get on my back and follow my lead, as they broke the huddle to head out there last night, as he told his teammates, just stay with me, I'm going to lead the way, that leadership we talked about, he needed to know that it wasn't going to be only him, the way it was in last year's finals. He needed a superstar to be a superstar with him, and Kyrie Irving did exactly that. So unbelievably impressive and so unbelievably important. That's one of the reasons why, as I say, we now have a series, that it was more than just a win in a series that is lost, and it's just kind of delaying the inevitable. Not anymore. Not when you do what they did and how they did it. Which brings me, of course, to J.R. Smith. I tweeted something yesterday, not long before the game. Somebody had the brilliant idea, and I don't even know who it was, to take all of J.R. Smith's tweets and put them on bulletin boards. Or not bulletin boards, billboards, beg your pardon, billboards. If J.R.'s hashtag tweets were to be on bulletin boards or billboards, and they just kind of, photoshopped it, if you will, and they did that, here's what it would look like, and he's got some great ones. I picked one of them out, and I asked, where is this guy? This is the guy whose motto we need him to follow starting tonight. And the tweet was, my motto is, when in doubt, shoot it. That was the quote. It was a J.R. Smith tweet, and somebody blew it up and put it up on like a billboard. And I just absolutely loved it because when in doubt in games one and two, J.R. Smith deferred. When in doubt in games one and two, J.R. Smith shrunk. When in doubt in games one and two, J.R. Smith, quite frankly, was invisible. He didn't shoot when in doubt. He cowered. He acted like he just wasn't meant for the moment. In game number three, that needed to change. LeBron needed that to change. Kyrie needed that to change. Tyronn Lue needed that to change. This series needed that to change. And thank God in heaven above, the man who formerly was known as a man with no conscience, a man if he was 1 for 10 or 9 for 10 from the floor, didn't matter. The 11th shot was going up because he feels like every one of them is going in. Contested, uncontested, falling away. Straight up, in rhythm, doesn't matter. No conscience. When in doubt, shoot it, was his motto. We hadn't seen it. Last night, we saw it. J.R. Smith took 13 shots. That's seven more than he took. No, I take that back. That is four more because he had three shots he took in game one and six in game two. So a total of nine there. So four more shots in this game than in the first two combined. Five out of 10 from three. He also had four rebounds, three steals, tremendous defense and an assist, and scored 20 points and had the highest plus minus in the basketball game for the Cavaliers. He was plus 33 when J.R. Swish. I love when they do that at the cue. Was on the floor. J.R. Smith was born again. And hopefully he remembers what makes him and made him the lethal assassin he was in the first three rounds of the playoffs, making 46%. Let me say that number again. That's Steph Curry-like. That's J.J. Redick-like. That's the best shooters in the NBA from three-like. 46% of his threes in the first three rounds of the playoffs. Then suddenly two gunshot to take those shots in the first two games. Took 10 of them last night. Made five of them. That's 50%. And that's exactly what they had to have. So as I run down through some of the tremendous individual performances from Game 3 last night, the game that has brought the Cavaliers back into the championship picture, as we run down some of those individual performances on the plus side, we have to acknowledge the pathetically abysmal performances on the other side. And there's something wrong with Steph Curry. No, I'm not making an excuse for him in that I think that maybe he's injured when I say something is wrong. I mean, that's not the dude that won the back-to-back MVPs. Something is wrong. And that something, I think, is the Cleveland Cavaliers. I know it sounds crazy, especially since in Game 2 they lost by 33, but they didn't lose by 33 because of Steph Curry. Steph Curry, quite frankly, through three games, if you really look at it in total, hasn't shown up yet. And I don't think he likes playing against the Cleveland Cavaliers very much. For a variety of reasons. Not the least of which is what we saw, especially in the first quarter when Kyrie went off for 16. We saw what I said we were going to see a year ago. And that is Steph Curry going to have to play defense against a point guard who has handles every bit as good as his. It's a different challenge than playing defense against a point guard with the athleticism of a Russell Westbrook. Kyrie Irving is going to put pressure on Steph Curry whenever they are matched up together. We know Klay usually guards the other team's point guard, their best backcourt player. But when they are switched or when they are matched up, Kyrie Irving is going to do some things to Steph Curry that only Steph Curry can do to other people. And guess what Kyrie did last night? Exactly that. He had Steph Curry reaching, twisting, turning, and grasping for air with crossovers and step backs that, again, have broken many a Curry opponent ankle. And last night it was Kyrie doing it to Steph Curry. I don't think he likes that. I don't think the way they make him work on defense when they're playing the way they were last night is something that he's fond of. And I know he's not fond of getting banged around as often as he is when he is on offense, and the Cavaliers are putting big, longer guys on him and are ready and willing to knock him around a little bit if that's what needs to be done. Tyronn Lue said two words are the most important. Aggression or aggressiveness and intimidation. I think those were the two. Now I kind of lost my place, but that's all right because I had his quote up before me. I don't have it now. But there were two words, and they were basically the same thing. Aggressiveness, physicality. Maybe there was aggression and physical were the two words. But at any rate, that's what they did to Steph Curry, and it's what they did to Klay Thompson. And it was bad enough that Klay Thompson was crying about it, saying that Timofey Mozgov is dirty. That's right, because Timofey Mozgov had the temerity to try to set a pick in the lane on Klay Thompson during a drive, and Klay got a little thigh bruise there. You know what? This is playoff basketball, son. You think you could have played with the Showtime Lakers asked the Lakers if they would have cried dirty if somebody set a pick on somebody in the middle of the lane the way Mozgov did on you.
Heck, Bob,
you're
they got
playing
those.
Soft basketball in a soft era, son. Don't be telling me anymore about how hard you are and how hard your Warriors could take it to the Showtime Lakers. Jimmy, go ahead.
Heck, they did get those picks set on them, at least in two series I could think of. The two NBA finals they played against the Bad Boys. I'm pretty sure Bill Laimbeer threw a few of those their way.
But that's my point. Meaning that the Showtime Lakers could take those picks and didn't cry about them. That's what I'm saying. They ran into those. They would run into the Bad Boys, wouldn't they? They would run into the Bad Boys. They would run into the Celtics and some of the big bodies they had setting picks like that on them, and they didn't cry about it. What I'm trying to say is, here's Klay Thompson saying how they could beat the Showtime Lakers. Please. Please. You couldn't hang as soft as those guys are. And you know what, Jim? I'm finding it out. Not just Klay, as a group. When they're running, gunning, and shooting threes and having fun, they are just the life of the party. When you get physical with the Golden State Warriors, you see them start to shrivel up. You see them go from coconuts to raisins, if you understand my meaning. That's what you see the Golden State Warriors doing, because quite frankly, when you get physical, they get soft. They are a soft group, and Klay Thompson's crying about how this is it was dirty, and why would you set a pick on somebody coming full speed in the middle of the lane? You want to know why, son? Because this is playoff basketball. This is finals basketball. And you're right, Jim, the era that we're talking about, and then he's talking about we could have been the Lakers. You know what? What would the Bad Boys have done to them? How would Klay Thompson respond to a Rick Mahorn or a Bill Laimbeer pick? How would he respond to a Dennis Rodman shoulder and elbow? How would he respond to any of the Bad Boys? I mean, seriously, to Aguirre or Dantler or anybody else who was there during that era? Give me a break. What we saw last night is the exposing of the Golden State Warriors as being a team that if they get up and get hot, yeah, they are the best team in the NBA and maybe one of the best of all time for a single season. But when they are not hot and when you start being physical with them, they don't like it. In fact, did you see Mo Spates complaining?
Yeah.
When during a dead ball, there was a missed shot and a foul call, and the ball bounced out to Steph Curry about the foul line. So Curry was going to go in and just do a, you know, dead ball while everybody's standing around dunk.
Oh, yeah. Yes, yes, of course.
And LeBron James, who was standing under the basket, saw
does
that
Kevin
coming.
Does Kevin Garnett impression.
And even in dead ball time, LeBron wanting to send a physical message saying, no, you don't, and rejected it.
That was
and
beautiful.
Curry
I loved it.
What's that, Jim?
That was beautiful. I loved it.
Curry landed and looked up like, really, dude? Really? And Spates started jawing like, oh, my God, did you what? Dude, really? What's that all about? And the message was, this isn't your house anymore. You don't get to come in here and just dunk into my lampshade. You don't just get to just come into my living room and spike the ball or slam the ball or anything else. This is my house, not your house. You don't come in here and do that stuff to show off during breaks. You want to come in here and try to do that? This is what I'm going to do in return. This is physical. This is Cleveland. And that as much as anything that happened within the confines of the actual play, the game, set a tone and told them this is a different series now. That was spectacular, and I got to tell you, we haven't even gotten to a lot of the meat of a lot of the issues so far. Seriously, we're going to talk about Mozgov on Thompson, that pick on Thompson that Klay thought was dirty. We're going to talk about what to do now that Richard Jefferson came in and had an impact on both ends of the floor. If Kevin Love is cleared in the NBA's concussion protocol, what happens next? And what is wrong with Steph Curry? Is he shrinking in the biggest moments? Something that a lot of people who have criticized LeBron James through the years, myself included, have said that he has done. And he has at various times with the Cavaliers prior to this turn, this time through, a little bit with the Heat in 2011 in the finals when he was basically a no-show against Dirk and the Mavs. Quite frankly, a lot of people have said that about LeBron James. Are they ready and willing to say the same thing now about Steph Curry? Because he has not been there for three games of the NBA Finals thus far. Shrinking, what and why? All of that on the table. I want you to be a part of the program today. We are guest-free. No analysts are going to join us today except for you and me and Cushlin, and let's get you on the air now at 866-240-1065. Did that 30-point blowout win, coming back from a 33-point blowout loss, change this series as measurably as I think it did? Or am I being just a little bit overly excited because we finally saw some life in a team that really had no pulse for the first two games of this series? You tell me your thoughts. We'll get you up and on the radio. 866-240-1065 after SportsCenter coming up right now on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
6-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
It is indeed the extravaganza. Thanks so much for being a part of the program on this Thursday. A whole new attitude, a whole new feeling, a whole new series, quite frankly, in the NBA Finals. And now, as we look back at all of the great things that happened in game number three, the question is what is going to happen to make things work in game number four? What if Kevin Love is healthy again? What if Kevin Love is cleared to play and he's out of the league's concussion protocol? What now? Do you, if you're Ty Lue, go back to your max contract power forward, who is, quite frankly, a spot-up three-point shooter now in the starting lineup? Or, which, by the way, you used when you lost games one and two so badly, or do you ride with what's working? And do you try to go ahead and keep the Richard Jefferson part of the starting lineup going because it led to a victory? The problem, of course, with trying to answer that question is how much impact did Kevin Love really have on losing in games one and two? Did they lose because of Kevin Love? Certainly not. I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say that he helped win because they didn't win, but he was one of many, many players that did not carry their weight, did not do their jobs in the first two games, and to scapegoat him because they won game three without him, I think, quite frankly, is patently unfair. But Kevin Love is that guy. He is a favorite target of the fans. A lot of Cavaliers fans in Cleveland and around the country, and a lot of the people we talk to right here basically say, don't let him play. We're better without him. We don't need him. They wanted Channing Frye to start over him, as a matter of fact, even before the injury in some cases, because Channing Frye gets hot from time to time from distance. So is Kevin Love going to be back in the starting lineup or not? That is one of the questions that Tyronn Lue is going to have to figure out if he is cleared by the league in the concussion protocol by game number four tomorrow. Before we start talking about that, and Jim, I want to get your thoughts on it too. I just want to play one quick clip for you, and this is LeBron talking about the moment we discussed a moment ago before the break. LeBron talking about why he decided not to let Steph Curry go up and dunk during dead ball time as a foul was being reported to the scorer's table. He wasn't going to let that happen in his house.
You know, when you have the greatest shooter in the world trying to get an easy one or trying to get in rhythm, it's our job to try to keep him out, no matter if it's after the whistle or not. So, you know, that was just my mindset. You know, anytime if you're a great player and you see the ball go in, no matter if it's after the play or during the play, then you start feeling, you know, not that you feel good because you know what you're capable of, but you know it helps. So I ain't wanted to see the ball go in, even though he still made some.
I didn't even want to see the ball go in, even though he still made some. I love that.
I do too.
That is something that it's minor in the grand scheme of things. He didn't block a shot at the buzzer to save a victory. He didn't block a shot into the ninth row to inspire his team. He blocked a dead ball dunk attempt. He blocked a pointless break in the action screw around shot by his opponent. It should mean nothing. It really is irrelevant in the big scheme. But Kush, it is so much more relevant than anybody really realizes when you take a look at how they reacted to that and you add it in context. Looking at it in a vacuum, it's one thing, but if you add that up with the other messages that were sent, the physicality by the Cavaliers in this game, the reckless abandon with which they played defense, got on the deck, all those 50-50 balls they didn't touch in game two, they won in game three. You add all those things up together, and even letting a guy get a dunk during dead ball time, it becomes bigger than what it really is.
Yeah, and LeBron summed it up in that quote. We didn't want to get him into any rhythm, even if that meant in, you know, an after-the-whistle kind of situation. And that's an interesting theme amongst many that now that the Cavaliers have won a game in this series, so it won't be the full sweep or blowout or any of that kind of stuff, can we finally give this Cavs team credit now for at least the one thing they've done well since this series opened? And it's something that I guarantee you a whole bunch of other coaching staffs around this league are taking notes on. They have more or less shut down both Curry and Thompson in this entire series. And I really didn't think it was that possible for somebody to do that in multiple games like this to both of them in a row. Neither has been in any kind of real flow. They've had pockets of times in this series. Steph hasn't gone for over 20. It's been multiple seasons since last time he didn't go for 20 or more in a couple games like this.
Well, here's a better stat in terms of Steph Curry and his ineffectiveness, and we'll talk about that, and we'll talk about whether his ineffectiveness is on him or if it's due to the Cavaliers, because I think there might be a little bit of both going on.
I absolutely think it's both.
Yeah, but here's a stat that I saw earlier today. Steph Curry, through the first three games of the NBA Finals, has the lowest point total in the history of the finals for a player who averaged 30 points or better in the regular season. Nobody else who has been a 30-point-plus scorer in the regular season went into the finals and has scored as few a number of points as Steph Curry in these three games. So that's a really, really staggering statistic, if you ask me. We're talking about a guy who just wasn't even able to be slowed down most of the time during the regular season, and with the exception of that handful of, not even a handful, but games 3 and 4 primarily against the Oklahoma City Thunder, with the exception of those few moments, you couldn't even slow him down. He got his 30 and he got it with ease, and it's because he was allowed to what? To run free and easy. To run from whatever spot he wanted to, and then if he wanted to put on a little a dribbling razzle-dazzle, they would clear out space for him to kind of make somebody look silly and then step back and hit it from 27 or something else ridiculous. And it was just so easy for him. The Cavaliers, quite honestly, aren't allowing him that space. I will not forget the image that they focused on last night. And Kush, I don't know if it was in the second quarter, maybe the third, when the Cavaliers were pouring it on and they were pushing that lead, which had gone from 20 down to about
this would be third quarter then.
Maybe?
Yeah, it got down to 7 at one point in the second quarter. So I think you're thinking the image. I think I know which one you're talking about. I'm pretty sure that was in the third.
Okay, the one I'm talking about, I might have been in the third, was Tristan. This wasn't about Steph. This is about Clay. But it just exemplifies the point. Clay Thompson is standing on the left wing near the baseline, not quite to baseline, left baseline outside the arc, but outside the arc in between the wing and the baseline area, right? And, he doesn't even have the ball. And Tristan Thompson, and the camera angle is from right behind Tristan, a little farther away than maybe you would have liked, but they even commented on it, how he is all over Thompson on the wing. In pointing out that, showing that the Cavs know full well that Klay Thompson once did that to the Thunder. Klay Thompson has done that to the Cavs. Klay Thompson has done that to a lot of people. So has Curry. That they take a 20-point lead, and they were pushing that 7-point lead back out. I don't know. It was around 15 or so at that moment, okay? And they have seen him suddenly just because they're getting blown out. The defense relaxes a little bit. It's just fun, and they're running and romping on offense. The defense relaxes, and suddenly Klay Thompson has hit three threes in three straight trips. Suddenly he's on his way to a 19-point quarter. Suddenly he scores 14 points in a row for his team. Those kind of things happen. And the image of Tristan out there literally nose in the chest and arms, one arm up and one arm wide, like you teach high schoolers to play defense. I mean, Tristan was practically slapping the floor Duke style in front of Klay Thompson, saying, come on, give him the ball. I'm ready. I'm right here. Big 6'10" Tristan Thompson was out there playing perimeter D against Klay, saying, you ain't getting a free one, not from here. Forget about it. And that image, to me, said so much about why the Splash Brothers haven't gotten off the way they always do in this series so far. Even in the 15-point win in Game 1 and the 33-point win in Game 2, it was not because of Clay and it was not because of Steph. It was because of the bench, as we know, putting up ridiculous numbers in Barbosa and Livingston and other guys are scoring in bunches that they normally don't score. They made a commitment to saying, if you're going to beat us from out here, you're not going to do it free. You're going to do it with hands in the face. You're going to do it with, who knows, if there's going to be a little more body contact after you release, but stuff that won't be called a four-point play. Whatever it isn't going to be free. And that is why I think, Kush, the Splash Brothers, if you will, have not been able to splash the way they have on their way to this record. So, the 73-win record, and the 2-0 lead in the playoffs, or in the finals. All right, I know we got some people. Let's get to it. Alex in Toledo, thanks for waiting. Sorry about the long monologues. There's just so much to say here, but I'll stop saying and start listening now. You start doing all the saying. Alex, go ahead.
Man, you pretty much summed it up. I was just going to tell you how they exposed Curry, but keep on going at him, man. That's all you got to do is put a body on him. He's too damn small.
Yeah, you're right.
Every time he cuts across the basket, someone got to bump him. You know what I'm saying? Because that's he's a free roamer.
And that's why, doing. You know what's weird, Alex? That's why some of the grumpy old men, as Isaiah Thomas is called and Oscar Robertson and other guys have been called, that's what they're talking about. You know, when they're saying, Steph couldn't have done this when we played. He's great, but, stop all of the talk, because if he was allowed to get bumped the way we were bumped and the way we bumped each other, he wouldn't be able to do this. And
even in high school. I played high school and college at the rec, not college, but, man, it's defense. Everyone plays defense. In the NBA, no one ever tries on defense, man. Like, that's why Kevin Love sits it out. Just because Richard Jefferson on the defensive end, he's busting his balls.
Yeah.
You know?
You're right. It's a very good point. And there's no doubt that Richard Jefferson, even at the age of, how old is Richard Jefferson? 38,
37?
38 years old? There's no doubt. He is even at this age, he is a much better perimeter defender, than Kevin Love, and that is evident, and you can see that yesterday. Now, whether that's enough reason to keep Love on the bench,
Kevin in with a different group, mix it up. You don't got to have the best five players always out there. Golden State don't have their best five players starting. Iguodala doesn't start, and he's better than Barnes, in my opinion.
Yeah. You know what? You're right. That's a very good point. They bring him in with a different group because he is more impactful then, and maybe that is something they have to think about, at least for, this series, at least for game four on Friday with Kevin Love. I'm just glad to hear you say use him in some way, because a lot of people are like, forget about him.
He's great. Kevin Love, on any other team, that man will stand out.
And it's not just any other team, guys. It's becoming clear to me. Think of the playoffs. Think of chunks of this year, even when Kyrie, whether he was there or not. This just seems like a horrible matchup for him, especially when he has to be put on Draymond Green, which he was a lot in games one and two.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah, and the problem defensively is going to be there for him. We know that. He's just not an elite defender. I think he could be a better defender if he was guarding another post player. Down low, he is big, he is long.
But Green's everything.
Chasing guys out on the perimeter, including Draymond, is not the best thing for him. I was hopeful that he could handle Draymond a little bit, because Draymond is not such a great three-point shooter like the Splash Brothers are. Let him go out there and let him see if he has it. But he proved in games one and two that when left alone, he will stick it, and that's a problem.
Yep. Yes. All right, man.
Alex, thanks, brother. Appreciate the call. Good stuff, man. Thank you. Let me go to Jim in Toledo next. Jim on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. How are you, Jim?
All right. How are you doing?
Good, man. What do you think?
I played a lot of college ball and played in high school, and I think Kevin Love just taking the fall for everything that's going wrong when it goes wrong. I think he can play, and I think he can shoot, and I think if you tell him not to play any help defense and stay out on Draymond Green, I think he could shut him down. But my thing is, everybody wants to pull him out, and it's like they're trying to use him as the scapegoat. But that guy's giving you anywhere between 15 and 20 boards a night, and nobody has said anything about that. Now, you can come in and give me 8, 10, 12 points. You give me 15 to 20 boards, you're in my lineup, and you're going to see a lot of time.
Yeah,
I don't think he gets credit for that.
I'm sorry, say again, sir?
I just don't think they look at that part. Okay, you put Channing Frye in. Yeah, Channing Frye, between you and me, I honestly never heard of him until Cleveland picked him up. I really never did, and I watch basketball all the time, college and everything. And I just sit there and think, okay, yeah, he can make a few shots, so can Kevin Love. But sometimes you sacrifice a little defense for offense. And I think if you just tell him, hey, if you don't want him to score or shoot, tell him, but I need you to stop Draymond Green, or I need you to stop this guy. But I'm telling you what, 15 to 20 boards a night and double doubles he usually has every game. How do you take that out of your lineup?
Yeah, I mean, I get it, and you really can. And I agree with you that he's been scapegoated a lot, and a lot of people. In fact, I had a friend of mine who does a nationally syndicated show on another network who tweeted something yesterday about this, saying, what happened to Kevin Love on the boards? Why isn't, if he's not shooting well, why isn't he at least doing what he did in Minnesota and getting, you know, the 15, 16, 17 rebounds a game the way he used to do? And I responded to it saying, and I don't mean to be hypercritical of the Cavaliers coaches or of LeBron James and the style that they want to play to open things up for him or Kyrie or whatever, but for whatever reason, the combination of reasons, the truth of the matter is Kevin Love, when he was at Minnesota scoring 26 and grabbing 14 a night, was a post player. He was right. Playing with his back to the basket, getting buckets inside, and then showing the range to step out and pull bigs away and hitting threes. But with the Cavs, they, in my opinion, have misused him from the moment he got here. They had him as a spot-up three-point shooter, trying to do what I just said, pull bigs away from the basket so LeBron can do his slash thing inside and Kyrie can penetrate, et cetera. And I just think it's a waste. My answer to my friend was, it's kind of hard to rebound from the three-point line. And, and that's where they've got him.
Yeah, and I totally agree with you on that. They need to put him back in, and you just need to let him know. To me is, you know, you don't lose your spot just like you say in football due to injury. I come back, I play him. But the other thing I just don't understand, I thought the whole time, you need to play the people and stuff that got you there. And to put the big boy mask off in, the one thing I'll say about him, he might give you 8-10. He's going to block a couple. But the guy will run the court for you. He's going to get up and down the court. He's not like one of you know, the bigger Loves, Chamberlain, Jabbar, where the ball's up with Cliff and they come lumbering up later. He's going to run the court. And I just think he needs to be in the game a little bit more at times. The thing that is, I would like to see him in the offseason here find a point guard and put Kyrie Irving at a two or a small three. I think, and you get a nice point guard, I think that's all they need to take off. And then I don't think anybody touch that team.
Well, the problem is, as we know and we saw last night, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. We're up against the top of the hour here. I want to ask anybody else that's on hold or everybody else that's on hold to stay there and do that because we will come to you. But I need a timeout at the top of the hour here for SportsCenter. But the problem we have with that idea of moving Kyrie to a two is what we just found out last night. As he said to the media, look, he said, I'm not much good if I'm not being aggressive, and I don't know if he can be as aggressive as an off guard. Waiting for the ball to come to him on the wing, he is a playmaker, court vision guy, sees weaknesses in the defense, and attacks it from that standpoint with the ball in his hands. And the truth of the matter is, when he is off, that hurts him and them because, you know, when your shot isn't falling, when you just are not in the right groove and somebody is that type of a ball dominant point guard and an attacker and an aggressor, it can hurt your team, especially if you've got a LeBron James waiting over here for the ball. But when he is on, you have a virtually unstoppable player. And then when LeBron James gets going too, and as you saw, Kyrie managed to do both last night. He ran the offense from the point guard position. He did indeed find those holes in the defense, broke guys down off the dribble, pulled up, attacked the rim, right hand, left hand, all those things that he does, and managed to drop eight dimes, many of them into the arms of LeBron James and J.R. Smith outside. So I don't want to take away what makes Kyrie great. We just have to find a way to minimize the inefficiency when he's not hot and he's playing that attacking, aggressive role that he says makes him good and maximize it and just get out of his way when he's got his groove going, which they did in that first quarter and for much of the second half until all the starters were pulled in game number three. Great conversation. What a difference a day makes. What a difference 24 hours make when talking about the NBA Finals. Let's continue that after the top of the hour Sports Center, which is right now. If you're on hold, stay there. I'm not hanging up on you. We'll get you on the radio next on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
James goes to Green. Layup is good. Irving on a beautiful feed from James.
Great vision from LeBron. Big finish by Kyrie.
Curry turns it over. J.R. Smith takes, throws it back to Jefferson, into James. James to the basket, left hand, and lays it in. Irving backs it in with a left hand. Kyrie Irving for three. Puts it in. Irvin fires. Bang! Bogut alternates, but the follow there from Thompson. Tristan Thompson with the offensive rebound and putback. James fires away and hits a three. Largest lead of the night.
And you know it's trouble when LeBron James begins to get that jumper to go down.
J.R. Smith twisting and turning, and it falls. J.R. Smith nails a three-pointer. Curry, triple team, pops it up. Iguodala tries to get it back. James picks it up, throws it ahead. Smith corner three, it's good. J.R. Smith fakes, sets, fires, connects, turns it over. James keeps his dribble somehow. Irving back to James. Oh, he throws it down.
We did a great job, and I get a game ball to RJ, getting a starting nod, Kevin being out, and he just came in with so much. You know, we just want to try to just play our game. We finally got back to our game tonight, and it started with the floor general to my left. You know, the sharpshooter to my right got it going. You know, it was just good basketball. It was a good flow. Everyone felt like they was a part of tonight's win. So it was just a collective team. It wasn't about us versus their starting five. It was just about how everyone can get the job done.
I just think it's two words, physicality and aggressiveness. I thought we were really, really physical defensively. I thought we were aggressive offensively, attacking the basket, getting out in transition, running the floor. And we talked about it before. That opens up shots for J.R. Smith and those guys in transitions. That's how we have to play.
It was two games going from game one of playing a little bit too much ISO, then game two, not being in my rhythm. And coming in game three, it was, I don't want to say a completely different player, but you know, it's just back to just not really thinking about anything except for being aggressive for my teammate.
Great opportunity on Friday to keep control of the series. It's going to be a challenge for us. I'm disappointed that I didn't do anything to help my team win tonight. It's not about living up to a certain expectation other than one that I have for myself, and I did do that tonight, and I gotta be better.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Rolling on into hour number two right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, talking NBA Finals for obvious reasons. There is a Finals now. Yesterday, I'll be honest with you, Cushland, I didn't know if we'd be talking today. If last night would have gone the way, you know, Nolan and I and you and others who were kind of you know, really, really morose yesterday, very melancholy, very down about things, the way things have gone on one and two, I wasn't going to spend a ton of time talking about what essentially was going to be a sweep. I really wasn't. I was just going to move on to some other things, talk about the Stanford swimmer story, which continues to drive outrage, talk about the funeral of Muhammad Ali and reminisce a little bit more about that. But I'll tell you what, new life was injected not just into the series, it was injected into fans, including myself last night, and all of a sudden I find myself reinvigorated and very excited about things.
Yeah, and it's because of the margin of victory. You know, forget the whole love part of the thing, which I know is obviously, you know, kind of a story for a lot of people on this one. Just because they end up turning the round, it wasn't a close win. They obliterate him. They were at one point, what, Bob, 30-10 at one point in the first quarter? For once, I actually felt semi-comfortable, you know, at that point. So to me, it's the way that they ended up doing that, because, okay, you get the win on the home floor, you avoid the sweep, but that kind of would have been the theme if it was a closer win. But by blowing them out this way, you say, okay, obviously there's differences. Apparently, as has gone on in the past, when you're at home or on the road, but to dismantle them like that makes you think two things: one, where was some of that in the first two games, and two, there's no reason to believe if they don't give the same effort that they couldn't duplicate it tomorrow night, and we're spending the whole weekend thinking, wow, it's 2-2 going back to Oakland.
Well, what it does to me, it makes you wonder, or what you have to question is why the Splash Brothers, for example, are just such non-factors here. Because if it's just a matter of they are cold, then, you know,
I don't think it is.
Then as soon as they get hot, then this thing is over, because they beat the heck out of the Cavaliers twice without them being hot. And once they get hot, then you can forget about this. But if you believe that, you know, once is a, you know, I forget how the phrasing goes now, but something about once is, you know, is an occurrence, twice is maybe a coincidence.
I refer to it as
a third time is it's a pattern or it's a habit.
Yeah. Yeah, I always refer to it once as an accident, twice as a coincidence, three as a pattern and or problem.
Well, yeah, there you go. And so that's, you know, that's the real question here as far as moving forward and whether or not they can do this again into game number four. But there's still a lot of questions to be asked about the Cavaliers side. Let's go back to the phones. I want to get as many people through as possible today talking about this because we may not have this again on Monday. They play game four tomorrow. Obviously, we have no shows over the weekend, and we'll see what we're talking about
there
on Monday.
Game five, though, is at least guaranteed for Monday
night.
Well,
we know that. I mean, we may not be able to talk enthusiastically about things come Monday.
Touché.
Looking back at game four on Friday is what I'm trying to say. Kevin in Toledo, let's see what he is trying to say right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Hey, Kevin, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Yeah, before I say anything about the sports, I just want to say how I love listening to the show. You know, I'm a big fan and I call in a lot. So I love, whether I agree or disagree, I love listening to the show.
Well, we love having you on the show, my man. Thank you for calling.
Now to the sports side of things, I want to say, let's pump our brakes here on the Cavs. You know, this is my take from it. The Warriors just came off a rough and tough seven-game series with Oklahoma City, arguably second to third best team in the NBA at this point. And, you know, they're exhausted still. They're exhausted still. I don't think it's so much more of the Cavs are shutting Klay and Curry down. It's more so that they've missed a lot of shots they usually make. They, you know, their legs are tired. They need to really just, I don't know what they're going to do between now and Friday, but eventually these guys are going to catch fire. They're not going to go a whole series like this. And let's not act like all of a sudden Kyrie Irving and J.R. Smith are defensive gurus. The Cleveland had their backs against the wall and they needed to win a game. And Golden State's situation, they're up two, they're going to Cleveland. They knew that there was going to be a lot of fireworks coming out and the Warriors fell behind and couldn't climb back out of the hole. So then we'll go on to game four. Same thing happened last year. They went into game four and they destroyed the Cavaliers. And I think that's what's going to happen again. I don't know if it'll be a blowout, but I see Golden State winning game four and then we'll be back to what everybody was thinking before game three.
Well, it is absolutely possible that that's how it breaks down. And in fact, even yesterday when we did talk to Rick Noland, our Cavaliers analyst yesterday, he said even if we do get a win in Game 3, he feels like it's going to end on Golden State's home floor in Game 5 because he expects the Warriors to come back and win Game 4. And I kind of understood that and agree with it and can see your argument about it now, except for the fact and not just the margin of victory yesterday, the 30 points, but just the way they out-physicaled Golden State in a way Golden State hasn't been out-physicaled, really, since games 3 and 4 of the Oklahoma City series. When you get rough with these guys, you start to see them shrink. And I mean, literally, they'll kind of cower away from contact. They're not a bunch of guys that like to get up in people's grills and push and shove. They want to be able to run free and easy. They're a thoroughbred rather than a pack horse. And they want to get out and run. They don't like it when they get banged. And this is something the Cavaliers did for the first time yesterday. I got to believe that if they do it for a second time on Friday, tomorrow night in game four, I don't think Golden State will respond any better than they did this time. The question will be, Kevin, will the Cavaliers shoot the ball as well as they did? You know, JR was the difference maker. Well, he was a difference maker yesterday. So was Kyrie because he shot so poorly in game two. If we're, when I say we, I'm a Cavs fan, and maybe you're not, but if we or the Cavs are shooting the ball that well and playing physical defense, then I think they can indeed still win game four. But if they play great D but also shoot the ball like garbage on their own, in their own right, then you may be right, and we're right back to where we started with a 3-1 Warriors lead.
And I also think this too. I don't agree that the Warriors are a soft team. I agree that the rules that the NBA have came up with have made the NBA softer. So when you're used to playing one style of ball, and then all of a sudden you're not getting calls that you're used to getting because of the rules that the NBA has came up with, it makes it a different ball game. And that's what happened to the Warriors, where it's a different ball game when when a team that when you're not used to, you're not playing physical most of the time, and all of a sudden the team is allowed to get away with a few fouls, it'll change the style that you play. And there was a lot of fouls that weren't called because they were allowing them to play. So I just think the NBA should call it. Hey, call it the same all the time. Don't let it be physical one game, and then you don't. And then you let it. And then you know you change it up the next game, and the Warriors are up 20 or something like that. Call it the same evenly
but
all
the
time.
But you know what, Kevin? I get that, but that's basketball, and has been for decades. You know, there's a difference between regular season basketball and playoff basketball. There's a difference between regular season foul and a playoff foul, and it's always been almost just accepted among coaches, players, and officials that when we get in here now in playoff time, it's for real. And there's going to be more contact. It's going to take more to get a foul called. A ticky-tack foul that might get a whistle for you in March isn't going to be blown in June or even in May during the conference finals and maybe just all the way through the playoffs. They do play a rougher style, and they let you play a little bit more aggressively. And like I said, the Warriors don't like to play aggressively, and they don't like when other people play aggressively against them.
Yeah, there is truth to that. You know, and I think, and this is where I think it's that physicality that Coach Lou, among others, were talking about. And if you get extra physical with them, it helps get them out of their rhythm a little bit. And this goes back to the obvious defensive plan that we've seen for three games. Yesterday, to me, was another example of we're going to defensively let others beat the Cavs. Or at least that was their mindset. I'm thinking of a couple plays off the top of my head where they went big time into traps on Curry on one side or the other of the wing. They forced some turnovers in this situation. They're still playing that style of defense, and that's been part of why their numbers have been struggling. Another thing that happened last night, too, he had 6.7 rebounds, 7 assists. So the assist and rebound numbers are okay, but the points drop way off. You know what I saw? I saw Draymond Green that was somewhat out of his comfort zone. And how many times have you heard me say, Bob, that if you start messing, and part of that was the lineup change. Part of that was Jefferson, or more specifically LeBron, kind of being put to the fore with Kevin Love out. And they got Draymond Green a little bit out of his comfort zone. And again, you've heard me say a bunch of times that in many ways, sure, Steph is the straw that stirs that drink, but Green is the cog that makes the engine go. And they messed that up a little bit yesterday. And there was that one timeout where they came back, and the ABC guys, they were talking about, well, we can't hear what they say, and then they got into a tangent about it. But it was during the one timeout where Green's basically yelling at everybody because he's out of his rhythm and out of his comfort zone. And that messes with Golden State's game plan when that happens.
Well, but the interesting thing about that, though, is we have seen a few times throughout this year, and it's been covered by the national news, Draymond Green yelling at his teammates, Draymond Green yelling at his coaches even, Draymond Green just going off the hizzy, hasn't been an indication. Well, it has been that he's been out of his comfort zone, but it has oftentimes inspired and rallied those guys.
Yep.
He's that emotional leader, that you hear oftentimes talk about. And there's a fine line when it comes to Draymond Green, as I understand it from the folks out there, a fine line between him losing his temper and going nuts and him really, really rallying everybody and snapping them out of their malaise. So, but I will say this, Draymond Green was 2-for-8.
Yep.
He was 0-for-4 from 3.
Yep.
And he had a couple of turnovers and a total of 6 points. So, yeah, he was most definitely outside his comfort zone. The question is again, you know, is the shouting an example of that, or is that the screaming, is that part of the I'm losing control, Draymond Green, or is it I'm going to
that's
get my
what
guys
I thought
back
I saw.
On?
Honestly, that's what course. I thought I saw. I thought I saw the former in that. And maybe in other times, in past instances that Green has done that this season that you're referring to, maybe it wasn't. But last night, that sure seemed like frustrated venting to me.
Yeah, and it very well may have been. And you know what? He's such an X factor for them, and so is how the Cavaliers defend them. Which,
yep.
Again, let's go back to the conversation now about Richard Jefferson versus Kevin Love and what they need to do about Kevin Love when he comes back, assuming he is going to be cleared by the league in the concussion protocol. What exactly should Ty Lue do? the problem that I have, and I said it before, and I want to go into it a little bit more in depth now, many fans, and including some analysts, are basically saying that, see, we don't need Kevin Love. He played in games one and two, and the Cavaliers lost. He didn't play in game three. The Cavaliers won. Ergo, Kevin Love is why we lose. And I find that patently unfair. It is not only not fair, I find it to be not accurate.
Oversimplified balderdash is what I say.
It is all of those things. And it's rooted, of course, in the way that the Cavaliers have used him, or, quite frankly, have failed to use him. That's a big issue here. As I said before, what they were bringing here when they acquired him in the Wiggins deal, what they were bringing here is a guy who was averaging 25, 26 points a night and 14 rebounds a game.
Those numbers would go down in this situation.
Knowing they would go down, but because he would have to not get as many shots. He would have to not share, he would have to share the ball more. He was the first scoring option for them. So the points you can see going down. Now the rebound numbers and the impact on the offensive end, not even in just shooting, but the impact, those haven't been there either. And that's because, again, they took a guy who was playing his game, and his game isn't just spot-up three-point shooter.
Right.
His game isn't basically what J.R. Smith is. His game is on the block. When you see him down there, I have seen him in isolated situations. Anecdotally, you see him showing an array of post moves, low post moves, where he can get down and get inside guys and go up over guys and score. And add to that, you know, 24, 25, 26 points a game.
And the other anecdotal
Minnesota.
And the other anecdotal point on that exact anecdotal point you just threw out there, Bob, is when they do that early and he gets shots, I swear that's when he has his best games.
Exactly. But the problem is even if they do that, it's just early. And then they say, okay, now get out there and stretch the defense. We need you to be a stretch four. That's not his ideal position as a stretch four.
Exactly. Always overplayed that. The simple fact of the matter is Kevin Love has that ability to be that guy, but to make that the majority of how you play him is boneheaded.
That's the role they've created for him, is you're just the guy who stretches the defense, and it's wasting 6'11" of rebounding prowess. You can't get offensive rebounds from outside the arc. You can't do it. Where does Tristan do his damage? Of course, he's down there battling and blocking out and attacking.
Sure.
And Kevin Love can't do that from out there and then get back out there if they do get an offensive rebound. The guy, to me, is misused. So that begs the question. He's misused. I think David Blatt misused him, and I think Ty Lue is continuing in the same way to misuse him. But it is what it is now. So what do you do? Do you say, okay, Bob France is right? Like, I can already see that to conversation in Ty Lue's coaches meeting right now.
In our dreams.
but you know what? These people who are saying this are right. We need to get Kevin back down low, and then he'll be more effective. They're not going to change the offense now. So you're going to bring him out and be that guy that he is, which they've made him, which is a spot-up three-point shooter, essentially, and put it back on the floor as a starter, or you're going to keep him on the bench and start Richard Jefferson, but not forget about him. Use him and use him frequently. Maybe not 38 minutes, but don't keep him on the court for 18 minutes either. Use him according to what he is, and if he's hot, and if he's able to go out there and do some of the things that give his teams a spark, which he has done it numerous times this year, when Kyrie is hot as well, and when LeBron is playing well, but do you know? Go ahead and don't start him if he's healthy to play, if that's the goal here, but don't forget about using him, and for God's sake, don't blame him. This is not his fault that he's been misused. There's a reason why his numbers aren't what they once were. It's because he's not taking the kind of shots he once did and getting the ball in the same places as he once did in Minnesota. And I just think it's important that people remember that.
Absolutely. And it's more than just that, because I'm thinking about this since yesterday. I'm thinking you bring him off the bench because I'm starting to really believe that this team specifically, the Warriors, and specifically their ability to go small, is what messes up Kevin Love. He didn't have these problems against Detroit or Atlanta or for most of the regular season when he was playing, despite those midseason LeBron cryptic tweets and all that nonsense. I think it's partly specifically this team, and even more specifically when they go small. It's what exposes the flaws, specific, especially on the defensive side, that Kevin Love does have. But you're right. You can't abandon him completely. If anything, to me, I keep the starting lineup that I had yesterday. I bring Love as my main big man off the bench, and I only go to Channing Frye in emergencies. Remember all that fun talk about Channing Frye? He's done literally nothing in this series. And if you're going to make this kind of lineup change, you don't need that many bigs against the Golden State Warriors.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. And in fact, obviously, by having Tristan being the biggest guy on the floor, well, he's roughly about the same size as LeBron.
Don't forget, sometimes you have to make these changes. Think about where we were at this point going into Game 4 last year. What did Steve Kerr do? He benched his big man, who incidentally was a former number one overall pick in Bogut, and those were three of the four total regular and postseason games that Andre Iguodala started in the entire season last year, and it worked.
That's exactly right. In the postgame press conference for Kerr last night, that was the first thing a reporter asked him, are you going to go do a different starting lineup and start Iguodala? And he looked at him and said, what? We lost one game and you want to change my lineup now? He said, no, we just got our butts kicked, blah, blah, blah. But that is the thinking here. And obviously Ty Lue had to make a lineup change because of the injury to Love. Maybe it's a blessing in disguise. But again, don't forget about Love even if he doesn't start game four tomorrow. And don't blame him because the first two losses are not on him. He's a very convenient scapegoat for a lot of people. I don't know why. But that's the way that it is. All right. The other side of this whole thing is what's wrong with Steph Curry? What's it going to take for the league's two-time reigning MVP and a unanimous MVP to make his presence felt in this series? They're talking about it in Oakland. I'm going to share some stuff with you from the Bay Area coming right up after this SportsCenter timeout on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. And you know what else I want to do for you before we take that SportsCenter? How about we hook you up with one of our two sweet deals of the week for this week? And our first one is a $50 gift certificate to Loma Linda's right now. Loma Linda's on Airport Highway in Swanton, authentic Mexican food, opened in 1955. I got a $50 gift certificate to Loma Linda's for you for just $25 tomorrow morning online at 1065theticket.com. That's 50 for 25. That's a pretty doggone good deal, or a better deal. How about a free $50 gift certificate to Loma Linda's for the 10th caller now to 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065. Caller number 10, Loma Linda's. That's yours. We'll be right back.
Now, back to Bob France, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Rolling on through a Thursday afternoon edition of the Extravaganza. Hope you're having a good day, as we are, as we're kind of more excited now about the NBA Finals. A lot of other stuff going on, certainly in the world of sports. We don't mean to ignore it, but you know what? When things are rolling the way they're rolling right now with the championship on the line for one of the teams that we cover and that a lot of folks in Northwest Ohio and maybe even in Southeast Michigan, if they're transplants, a team a lot of people like, and that is the Cleveland Cavaliers, whether they're LeBron fans or they're native Clevelanders like Jim Cushlin and myself. We grew up watching and loving the Cavaliers, so we got to keep paying attention when there's a championship on the line. And when they play like there's a championship on the line, Cush, unlike games 1 and 2, where they really didn't act like there was anything on the line at all. I mean, practically no shows. So, by the way, congratulations to Steve Rosebrock of Swanton. Steve was the winner of the Loma Linda's Sweet Deal of the Week. So, congratulations. And by the way, we got another sweet deal coming up here I'm going to do before the end of the show. So if you want to win a great $50 gift certificate, I'll tell you what the next one is. Even though we're not giving it away now, don't call now, but the House of Meats is coming your way before we're done here at the top of the hour and we go to a drive time with Mike Miller, who is replaced so ably today by Jim Cushlin.
Meats.
So, I know, I love that. I just love it. House of Meats. Reminds me of the Arby's commercials. It's great, great marketing right there because I, too, love the meats. All right. I want to look just at the Bay Area. Now, this, I tweeted this, Cush. I don't know if you saw it, and we'll get to the calls in a second, but I tweeted this. I don't know if you saw this about half an hour ago because I couldn't believe it. I wanted to see what was going on by the Bay. How did they react? They, meaning the fans of the Warriors, react to the arse-kicking that the Cavaliers gave them in the queue last night. And one of the first stories that jumped out at me, much to my surprise, was one of the worst kinds of stories that you can see. These, our city was treated rudely by your city articles. Way to stay classy, Cleveland. Way to stay classy, Cavaliers. This is actually a story. In SF Gate, which is San Francisco and the Golden Gate, SF Gate, it's their San Francisco Chronicle website. The headline story is, did that Cavs fan elbow Steve Kerr's daughter on purpose? This is an actual story. It's not long, so I'm going to read the whole thing, okay? Reports that Steve Kerr's daughter, Maddie Kerr, was bonked in the head by a Cavaliers fan during Wednesday night's pulverizing Warriors loss in Cleveland raised serious questions around the internet on Thursday morning. Did the Cavs fan elbow the star Cal volleyball player on purpose? According to Maddie's mommy, oh yeah, he did. Thank you, at Cavs fan, who elbowed at Maddie M. Kerr in the head for a t-shirt. We know it was on purpose. Hashtag classy. That's the direct quote that Margot Kerr tweeted on her protected Twitter account that those who have access to it have shared. Maddie Kerr seemed to agree with her mom's analysis of the motive, responding, and for pretending it didn't happen. At Oracle, we apologize for these things, even if the person is on the other side. So far, conveniently enough, no video evidence of the alleged elbowing has emerged. It's not clear if the Cavs fan ever got what is likely an XXL-sized shirt. But Maddie seemed to have brushed the whole episode off by Thursday. Whoops, that escalated quickly, she tweeted. Game 4 of the NBA Finals Friday, 6 p.m. Pacific time. The Warriors lead 2-1. The fact that that story was even on the website, it was the SF Chronicle website, is honestly embarrassing to me. There is absolutely no evidence. Have you seen, Jim, you've been in arenas when they're throwing T-shirts or shooting them out of the cannons? It is what it is. It's a scramble to catch T-shirts.
Sometimes when those things happen, I'm surprised there's not more elbows hit on people's heads, honestly.
Oh, exactly. And it's not on purpose, and it's not because she's Maddie Kerr.
I wonder if the person would even know that.
Exactly. I didn't know Maddie Kerr.
And I'm going to go this route, too.
I did not know that Maddie Kerr existed. Now, that's not to say I didn't know that Steve Kerr had kids. I'm sure he did, but I don't know because I've never cared. And I still don't care. And I'm very, very certain that nobody in the Cavaliers fan base last night at Quicken Loans Arena knew who Maddie Kerr was and was just waiting for the opportunity for a shirt to come his way so we can get in a cheap shot at the daughter of the Warriors coach. Because that's what everybody in a normal frame of mind would do. And by the way, they didn't say he did it accidentally. Margot Kerr, Steve's wife, Maddie's mom, says, quote, we know it was on purpose. That's indicating that somebody wasn't just scrambling for a T-shirt and didn't even realize maybe they had hit someone, that it was on purpose. I'm looking for a reason to throw a bow at Maddie Kerr. Why? Because her dad coaches the enemy. I can't wait to throw this elbow. How am I going to do it and when? I don't know. Somebody passing a beer down the row from the usher in the aisle, and maybe I turn and, oh, sorry, elbow to the side of the head. Maybe, I'll turn around to talk to somebody and, oh, sorry, didn't see you there with my elbow coming up to your jawline. I don't know how I'll do it, but I'll find a way. Hey, look over there. They're giving out T-shirts now. This is my big opportunity. Somebody, come on, cheerleaders, aim that cannon over here. Now I've got my opportunity. Oh, are they coming this way? They are. Here it comes. Bang. That's what I was looking for, an opportunity to throw this big Cleveland elbow into the face of the college student next to me because she happens to be the daughter of Steve Kerr. That'll show her, way to be the daughter of the wrong person, girl. next time maybe you'll think twice about coming to your dad's basketball game in my house. How'd that elbow taste as I got my size 2XL shirt?
And even if I play in the hypotheticals that everything you just said actually happened, I got one more factoid that makes it completely unbelievable. I'm betting that most Cavs fans are fully aware of those couple of years, about 4 or 5, that Steve Kerr actually played for the Cavs.
Yeah, and he was such a bad guy, too. Everybody hated him. Oh, my God, we couldn't wait till that guy got out of here, and boy, if he ever comes
back.
To
this day, Bob, I think it was game 2, first round, 92. He made a half-quarter at the halftime buzzer, and I still think of it as one of my favorite plays I saw a Cav make when I was a kid. That was 25 years ago.
And not only that, you know what he was and is today? Just about one of the nicest human beings in sports.
Always has been.
And
even
I mean,
when he was one of the few Bulls I couldn't bring myself to hate in that era.
I mean, yeah, and I agree with you. I mean, he's just a very likable guy, a very nice guy. He doesn't talk down to reporters. He doesn't talk down to players. He, you know, he gets angry like anybody else and breaks a clipboard or two, something I can relate to because I kind of coach the same way. But in all seriousness, he is a wonderful, wonderful, very well-respected and liked guy. But for his wife to declare, "We know it was on purpose, hashtag classy," might be one of the most ridiculous things that I've ever heard, and B, with the exception maybe of this one, the fact that the newspaper ran with the story. Unbelievable. So that
I think I'm more upset about point two, honestly. Like, well, what's the point, guys? Come on, why even run this? Are you really just trying to avoid the ink space of how the Cavs D has been shutting down Curry and Thompson that much? You got to fill the columns this way?
Well, they're not doing that because there's another story about Clay in which he is, and I'm glad to hear this. I really am. Klay Thompson, who, of course, intimated last night that the pick set by Timofey Mozgov on Thompson as he was chasing, who was it, Kyrie down the lane?
I think so.
And you know, Mozgov came up basically with what is a blindside pick, which is also, by the way, an illegal pick because it was in the paint. So, you know, but it wasn't just a rough body play. And the fact that Mozgov's knee came out a little bit, which you do when you're trying to set a pick and you've got to move over a little bit, you're not allowed to move your whole body, then it's a moving pick. I mean, that's just basketball. That happens at every level and at every regular season or playoff or anything else basketball.
Heck, in basketball, when players collide knees eight out of 10 times, it's on this kind of play.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the idea that that is dirty, which is what Klay Thompson called it, is just ridiculous. It's playoff basketball and it's physical basketball, something that the Cavaliers, by the way, made a point of wanting to play last night after having their, you know, their faces rubbed in it two times in Oakland. They were just tired of this and were clearly going to play physical basketball. That does not equate to dirty basketball. It's just physical basketball. And the fact that Klay Thompson doesn't know that and was all bitter about it last night, to me, bothered me. This, however, restores at least a little bit of my respect for Klay Thompson. Klay Thompson, still sore today, is backing off of the dirty or illegal or whatever play by Timofey Mozgov. Yeah, last night he said it was kind of dirty, and now he says, quote, "As I watched the replay, it might have just been bad luck, too. A knee to the thigh never feels good. I don't think he meant to do it maliciously, but usually when someone sets a screen, you do it with your chest or something." Well, two things. One, of course you do, but when you're 7 foot Timofey Mozgov and you're trying to come over to set a screen on a smaller Klay Thompson, who is already hunched over because he's in defense mode, you know, he's playing low crouch defense mode and trying to run with Kyrie, guess what? It's not going to be chest to chest. Your body is going to run into his legs. That's just the way that it is. It's physically, that's where you are. Klay also said, "I'm not going to hold a grudge. It's basketball. I've just got to play through it and get right. I'll be good for tomorrow." Good for Klay Thompson. I have respect for that. He does understand that what he had was just, you know, kind of a collision, incidental contact. Well, it wasn't incidental because it was an intentional pick by Mozgov. So that's not incidental, but it certainly wasn't an intentional injury or an attempt to throw a knee out there to give him a Charlie horse in his thigh. The better part about this is the other thing that Klay Thompson said today. And again, I'm looking at the East Bay Times. I'm looking at the San Francisco Chronicle. All of the media that covers the opposing team. Sometimes that's much more fun than just reading your local newspapers, is see what they're saying in the other cities. And Klay Thompson also said, quite frankly, that what beat his team yesterday and what has beaten him and Steph Curry, the two Splash Brothers, in three games this series, not that they were beaten in the first two, but as far as their own personal performances being so low scoring and so ineffective and so non-impactful, if you will, on the outcomes, because they didn't impact the outcome yesterday in a 30-point loss, and they didn't impact the outcome of the 33-point win in Game 2 or the 15-point win in Game 1. They just haven't done enough. Thompson says, we're soft. How about that? See, Steve Kerr didn't hold back. He said the Warriors were soft after the game last night. And Klay Thompson said, coach is right. Anytime a team that goes up 33-14 on you in the first quarter, that's pretty soft of us. We can't expect just to show up here. That's on us, and that's on our starting lineup. We were soft. That is a very, very impressive statement to me, because it's what the Cavaliers have been waiting to hear. How did they go out there and take a 33-point loss from Game 2 and turn it into a 30-point win? It wasn't just because they got hot shooting and J.R. Smith. I went through Kyrie. I went through LeBron. I went through J.R. and I went through Richard Jefferson and all of their contributions. Tristan Thompson, by the way, I did not cover with his very, very strong double-double. I believe he had 14 and 13, and 7 of the 13 boards were on the offensive end.
That is correct.
That's amazing. That's awesome, and that's what he needs to be. So, but it's not just about the shooting. It is about recognizing that, you know what, these guys are almost impossible to beat and pretty much impossible to defend when they're running in open space. They are gazelles. They are thoroughbreds. They get out in space and they run the floor. Even in half-court offense, they're running the floor to get to spaces that we can't switch fast enough to cover, and when they're wide open, we can't stop them. So rather than trying to run with the thoroughbreds, which is a disaster of an idea, they said, let's be what we are. Well, we're going to be big physical pack mules. Rather than thoroughbreds, we're going to be pack mules, and we're just going to use our brute strength, and we're going to body these people up. Part of that was the pick that we just talked about by Mozgov. Part of it is bouncing Steph Curry off of guys like a ping pong ball when he's running around from one end to the other on defense. They're running him into screens. And when he's on offense, they're switching off on him just to give him a little shoulder shove here and there, to the point where a 6'3", 180-pound body or whatever it is that Curry's got in the weight department isn't very well equipped to handle. You wonder what happened to Steph Curry? Maybe that is part of what happened to Steph Curry. He doesn't like this sort of physical basketball because he, like they, are soft. And now that they're acknowledging it, now that the coach says it, now that a player says it, the Cavaliers have the secret. And not that it's a secret, but now they know the recipe to beat these guys. Just beat them up to the point where they are, a little bit too abused, if you will. And when I say abused, you know, physically just not able to play or shoot the way they want to, but B, as you pointed Jim out before with Draymond Green, just a little bit out of sorts, a little bit, how did you describe Draymond?
Out of his comfort zone.
Out of his comfort zone, and that's what they're doing. And then I'm going to share this last story with you. This one is from the eastbaytimes.com, which covers the San Jose Mercury News, the Oakland Tribune, and some other papers. What happened to Steph Curry is the headline. They're all trying to figure this out for themselves. Is it what I just said, or is it more than that? Most of the time, teams, coaches, and media, especially if you are a star player on a star team, it's never the other team that is taking you out of your game. It's what you're doing that's doing wrong that's the problem. We're beating ourselves is always a better answer than we got beat by better players or we got outplayed by better players. So the question isn't how are the Cavs defending Steph Curry? It's what's wrong with Steph Curry? And immediately people in the Bay are saying, is he healthy? Is there an injury concern here? Is he banged up? Is the ankle back? All of those kinds of things. What's wrong with Steph Curry? Well, to me, the only thing wrong with Steph Curry is is J.R. Smith, and at times Iman Shumpert, and at times Kyrie Irving, and at times switches off with Tristan Thompson, and at times virtually everybody, Richard Jefferson, who can play perimeter defense or is willing to play perimeter defense on the occasional trip down the court, giving him a different look every time. Steph Curry is still a great player, but I think he is so rattled by the way they're playing him, the number of different guys and looks that he gets, that it's made him look a little bit, it's hard to say whether I want to say confused, because you look at that dazed, almost glassy-eyed, like maybe he's a little buzzed kind of look on his face. It's either confused or just completely disinterested. Like, man, I'm sick of this. But that's how he has looked. Curry says, I would have yanked me too. He talked about when Steve Kerr pulled him out in the second quarter when he had 2 points and three fouls and I think four turnovers at that point. He was playing so poorly that they had to do something. And right now in the Bay Area, they're saying, how do we get him to play better? It's his mistakes that are costing him, not the Cavaliers' defense, which is limiting him. And that, to me, is something I hope they continue to say as well. If they think it's all about Steph just finding his groove and that the Cavaliers have nothing to do with it, then they're not going to make any adjustments to what the Cavaliers are doing to it. And that's what I hope to see in Game 4, which is tomorrow night. All right, that's it. Out of time. Great stuff. Great conversation. Appreciated it every step of the way. In fact, I appreciated it so much that I want to do something nice for you on the way out the door here. How about we give you that other sweet deal that I promised you about? If you are the 10th caller right now to 866-240-1065, I've got a $50 gift certificate for you to the House of Meats, your old-fashioned butcher shop, 6 locations in the Toledo area. I got a $50 gift certificate to caller 10, 866-240-1065. Everybody else, I got a $50 gift certificate for just $25 online tomorrow morning starting at 9 a.m. If you get on 1065theticket.com. All right, Game 5 tomorrow night. We'll preview it tomorrow and get into some weekend baseball in front as well. Maybe even look into who the Indians and the Tigers draft in the amateur draft that starts tonight. All of that on tomorrow's extravaganza. Drive Time is coming up next. Cushman and for Miller, stay where you are. We're out.